of economic growth, global economic growth, strong growth, solid growth.
Economic growth is the guiding principle that around which society coheres. Well, exactly what is it that is growing? We always say economic growth. If you try to write into your computer uneconomic growth, it'll give you an error signal and it'll say, well, misspelling or something. But that's a real concept. Growth can be uneconomic. It can cost more than it's worth. And that's the new era that we're moving into, and we have to come to recognize that. Once you get in your mind a picture of here is the Earth biosphere, here's the economy, you begin to see how does the economy live off the larger system? That's not really hard to understand.
You're listening to Kaput
Radio.
Completely kaput.
As the economy expands, it takes in more energy, more matter. It takes it from where? From the biosphere. And as we consume more, we throw out more waste. Where do we throw it? Back to the biosphere. So that's depletion, and that's pollution. And then we move into an era of uneconomic growth, in which growth increases the production of bads faster than the production of goods. It accumulates ilth faster than wealth. How big can these inputs of materials and energy be? How big can the outflow of waste be before it begins to foul up? That's not really hard to understand. I mean, I can explain that to my grandchildren.
We are not looking at facts when making decisions for the wrong reason. Our big businesses, most of them, are world class. I'm not talking about J.P. Morgan, but you think these are among the best businesses in the world.
I was dead wrong when I said that.
We should punish people if they committed a crime or made a terrible mistake. You know, I've worked in Wall Street most of my life. That's what we should be talking about. And just like President Obama, I would love to lift up the poor, the impoverished, the inner-city school kids.
I was dead wrong when I said that.
We know we were sloppy. We know we were stupid. We know there was bad judgment.
This is a guy who's been fighting new regulation.
We made it clear it could get worse before it gets better. You know, it could be volatile by $1 billion, possibly.
The Greek unity government.
Yeah.
I mean, prime ministers have come and gone. More austerity measures have been enacted. How do you see this whole situation in Europe?
They signed there with their suicide notes when they signed the Maastricht Treaty. Because even a small crisis would have destroyed the Maastricht Treaty. That was because it was designed by neoclassical economists who live in a fantasy world, which argues that capitalism never has any downturns. Well, of course, they said is a pair of rules about it, which was simply insane. The first rule was that aggregate debt of a government could not exceed 60% of GDP. Now, bear in mind, America's, by the way, is running higher than that in government debt,
right.
And private debt at 300% of GDP,
right. Yeah, right.
Which they ignore. So it's an insanely bad system. Economics is not a science. People think it's a science. That's why the Nobel Prize, which is a joke, it's not a real Nobel Prize either, made up by the Swedish bank rather than by the Nobel Committee. In economics, unfortunately, because it's tied up with our belief about our social system, ideology has dominated. Yeah.
But we do see this movement, Occupy Wall Street, obviously, mm-hmm. Protesting Wall Street. You've spoken at it in Australia.
I'm willing to speak again at any of the rallies, any around the world.
You heard him.
To me, they're finally challenging the hegemony, not just of the finance sector, but also of conventional thinking about the economy. Neoclassical economists don't understand neoclassical economics. They don't even know their own area properly.
Have you heard this idea about the Robin Hood bankers' tax?
Yes. It's a sweet little idea, taxing the banks to help the poor, but
I don't think it'll work. It's very complicated and will be very tough on the banking sector.
Which has just been given billions of pounds of taxpayers' money to keep it going.
Well, yeah, of course.
And is still paying itself billions of pounds in bonuses.
Yes.
So the tax is a charge on all bank transactions that don't include members of the public. Bonds, derivatives, currency, speculative stuff. Is that right?
Yeah, something like that. Very complex.
So the bankers would give how much from each deal they do? 25%?
Well, no, not that much.
10%?
No.
5%?
No, not 5.
More or less?
Slightly less.
What, 1%?
Not quite.
Half of 1%?
No.
A tenth of a percent?
No.
Half of that? They give around 0.05% of every deal.
Yeah, that's about right.
And sometimes it'd be even less. That doesn't sound like a lot to most people.
No. I can see that.
And how much would it raise to help people at home and abroad?
Oh, a fair amount, I believe.
About £1 million a year?
No, more than that.
£100 million?
More.
£500 million? £1 billion?
No, it's slightly more than that, I'm told.
£10 billion?
More.
£50 billion?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
In fact, I believe it's likely to be more than £100 billion. Could be double that. Could be more than double.
Possibly.
Right, so let me get this clear. A tiny tax on the banks could raise billions of pounds every year to help save lives in the poorest countries, fund crucial action against climate change around the world, and help avoid cuts to crucial public services in this country.
Gosh. Well, yeah. That is about the, sum of it. I don't know. Perhaps it's quite a good idea.
This is the sequel to the Subprime Mortgage Blues. Hank Paulson, stop bailing out your bankers with our tax money. Check yourself before you wreck yourself. Last year I dropped the Subprime Blues. Now it's time for an update and there's plenty of news. You may have heard the first song, but now I'm back. No longer blue, I'm pissed off, so I made it a rap. When we last left our heroes, they were printing cash fast. The financial sector still flat on its ass. More financial gimmicks they couldn't seem to stop. No matter what they did, house prices dropped. As foreclosures rose, some banks were done. That's what happens when you leverage up 30-1. With that strategy, bankers make money fast. When they lose, it's okay because it's not their cash. As banks failed, Paulson said, what have I done? If a big one goes down, it will not be fun. But I guess these banks have a lesson to learn. The first student of the lesson, the Great Bear Stearns. Check yourself before you wreck yourself. You better check yourself before you wreck yourself. Chickity check yourself before you wreck yourself. Bailing out bankers is bad for our wealth. Hey, check yourself before you wreck yourself. You better check yourself before you wreck yourself. Chickity check yourself before you wreck yourself. Bailing out bankers is bad for our wealth.
I want to run a tape that relates to precisely what we're talking about. If we look at the history of corporate scandals, we find ourselves scratching our heads asking, why didn't someone speak up? Our next story may shed some light.
3,000 miles from Wall Street, in the small village of Wass, England, one man knows firsthand the challenges of business ethics. Paul Moore was hired to evaluate risk at a large British bank called HBOS.
As soon as we started to take up the rocks and look underneath them, almost everywhere we looked, there were control issues, there were specific examples of potential mis-selling of products, overselling of credit, and so on. I think I can sum it up by the lady of Halifax, who said to me, we'd never hit our sales targets and sell ethically. And it was like taking the lid off a pressure cooker. It was that bad. So everybody in the front line knew that what was happening was wrong. They didn't feel confident to speak up.
Senior management, according to Moore, was moving toward a new way of banking.
They recruited a man who had worked for Asda, which is now part of Walmart. He was a supermarket retailer to run the retail bank. So you can see how the mindset was working. It was, we'll move away from that old way of doing banking, which is kind of fiduciary, very cautious, into a kind of retailing strategy. It was basically what we call a stack 'em high, sell 'em cheap strategy.
And HBOS returns were beating the competition year in and year out.
They were being told that they were brilliant by the analysts, by the city, by the shareholders, by everyone. And there's me. I called myself a man in a rowing boat trying to slow down an oil tanker. Perhaps it was a man in a rowing boat trying to slow down the Titanic. Maybe that's a better analogy. And so I'm a troublemaker. I'm a nuisance. The retail was a mixture of incentivized on sales targets. And if they don't hit their sales targets, you hit them over the head with the blunt instrument. So you've got both elements operating. The chief operating officer of the retail bank, who's, I won't mention his actual name, his nickname was Wacka. And my boss used to take great pleasure in meetings in referring to him as Wacka. They celebrated the fact that his name was Wacka. So it was a kind of culture that celebrated bullying.
Little pig, let us in! It's a penny!
Now being taken into custody, so the spotlight is once again shone on the grey area of homeowners' rights to protect their properties.
This isn't right. The three little pigs are the victims.
We walked through down two houses. We got what you deserve.
But the pigs went too far.
Every right to defend your property.
Boiling someone alive hardly constitutes reasonable
force. Somebody is going to break the law and intrude on
you. Can't protect yourself in your own home.
A man's home is his castle.
Someone tried to blow my house down, I'd do the same.
I knew the wolf. There's no way he could have blown down those houses. He had asthma.
But the wolf had asthma. So what's the truth about the pigs' houses being blown down? Inside job.
There's no reason why those two houses, one made from straw, the other from wood, should have collapsed. Not even a healthy wolf's huff and puff could bring them down.
The three little pigs have confessed to conspiring to commit insurance fraud, framing the wolf in an attempt to cover their tracks. Their motive was financial, as they struggled to keep up with their mortgage repayments.
Guilty. I can empathise with
I'm behind on my payments too. I just...
How could this have happened?
I've lost everything.
It's been happening for hundreds of years. Credit expands, asset prices go up, wages go up, expectations go up. Everybody's really happy for a while, and then suddenly something goes wrong, and it just pops.
People always tell themselves this time is different. The underlying mechanisms are not different at all.
You know, economists became very convinced that markets were mechanical, that they behaved according to normal distributions and you could calculate what was going to happen.
Although it was in fact perfectly obvious that the new economy was a bubble, the view was that markets were efficient and therefore you couldn't say that.
They blindsided themselves to the role of rising debt in funding what is really the biggest Ponzi scheme in human history, which is what we've been through in the last 20 years.
One of the remarkable things about the period before 2007 was that people had blind faith in many institutions and techniques, and suddenly, dramatically, in 2007 and 2008, that faith and credit markets cracked.
Now we really understand much more that the failings of the markets are more pervasive, deeper, more worrisome. Markets are often not stable. They often don't produce full employment. Right now, one out of six Americans who would like a full-time job can't get one.
The issue is not simply that Wall Street blew up and we needed to restore those banks to health. The issue is that many, many, many people lost their jobs, and that's a fantastically high cost. We need to figure out much better ways of dealing with that.
So there's a man. He's definitely a man. And he's really smart. And he knows exactly what he wants
at any point in time. He can decide whether he wants to work or not work, spend, save, all these things. And what we do is we replicate that man, we clone him 10,000 times. And we call this guy the representative agent. The aggregation of all of these individuals makes up a model of the macroeconomy. This is, in a very caricatured way, what's called dynamic stochastic general equilibrium. This is the dominant modeling metaphor in economics at the moment.
Those models were useful benchmarks, but they obviously were not the right way to think about what's happening in a banking crisis where so many of those assumptions are violated.
Neoclassical economics is a way of thinking about the world that is rather helpful in relation to some problems. What the mistake is to think that it's the only way of thinking about any economic problem.
Not everybody is driven by rational desires to maximize rewards in quite the way that economists expect. Non-financial rewards may turn out to be very important.
It's not that human beings are irrational, it's that they're human and they make judgments and they don't know what's going to happen next and they're adaptive. Emotion plays a part in that, or at least you could call it gut feelings. In most matters with financial assets, there are several conceivably perfectly reasonable outcomes, and so choosing which one is not irrational. You go on your gut feelings, which is the only way to do it.
Neoclassical theory just assumed that demand was equal to supply, and one aspect of demand equals supply was demand for labor was equal to the supply of labor, that is, no unemployment.
I call it the pirate obsession of economics. They love X marks the spot, you know. So they have intersecting supply and demand curves for individual market. But because they started from the point of view of modeling the system in equilibrium, they have never quite broken out of that mindset. Of course, when you try to model financial instability in equilibrium, it's really hard. The reason was, it can't happen.
It's something that's very anti-scientific, actually, because in the 1970s and 1980s, a lot of work was done to say, well, look, you know, you can't actually attain an equilibrium. You can get arbitrarily close, but you won't really get there.
Economic theory gives what appears to be a simple, plausible, complete explanation for capitalism. It all seems to hang together. Trouble is, it's wrong. We don't live in an economy like that. We live in an economy which has credit in it.
What is important, I think, to understand about market economies is that they have financial sectors which generate instability. And that's because they generate credit and debt, which, as far as the real sector is concerned, comes out of nothing. And that's something that doesn't really sit well in the structure of DSGE models and of equilibrium models in general.
The situation before 2007 was a bit like the medieval Christian church, in that you had financial priests speaking a language that almost no one else understood. And above all else, they created this overwhelming sense of confidence that this new priesthood, these economists and bankers, understood the world and could forecast where it was going. And the rest of us had to sit there dumbly and just accept that.
The problem is, in doing that, they've also had the ability to, and the funds, to capture large sections of the American political system to make sure that their whims are catered to. And in my opinion, that's wrong.
One of the things that I find is that a credit crisis is always preceded by deregulation, which means that banks are no longer regulated by the government, by the monetary authorities.
We've had a massive corporate governance failure, and some people have grown to be extraordinarily rich as a result of that.
I think there is an urgent need right now for economists to do what I call silo bust, to get out of their silos, their academic silos and their institutional silos and their mental silos, and actually try and interact with and learn from other disciplines.
It's important that we work with sociologists, we work with historians, we work with neuroscientists, we work with that broader group of people, because we're trying to analyze fairly complex behaviors, and very often these people have insights that we don't have.
You know, economists can stick to being economists, but interface with people from other disciplines in a serious way.
But most of all, economists need to be humble, because unless they recognize that they have been preaching a set of convictions and ideas with far too much arrogance in recent years, there is a danger that their very valuable aspects in the discipline will end up getting ignored.
We have to go back and point and build a new economics starting from a correct foundation, which can then handle the aggregation or handle the social level that neoclassical economics can only get to by pretending we're all clones of each other.
Part of the issue is going to be some tweaking, and part of it is going to be realizing when you can't tweak anymore and you need to move to the next, some next paradigm.
Send me some green.
Then slash the entrance like something obscene.
Just drop it 2 points or even lower.
And please don't say the leverage fraud is over.
Pimpernanke, I need a loan. A discount window to call my own. Please send me FOMC. Ben Bernanke, send me some green. Ben Bernanke, I'm in the red.
Help me like you did
Fanny and Fred. Please make it quick, cause I'm in foreclosure.
Send me more checks before I lose composure.
Ben Bernanke, I need a loan.
I'm broken, hurted,
right down to the bone. Please send me an income stream. Benny, disinflate me my dream. Ben Bernanke, send us some green.
Some insider welfare would be peachy keen.
Just like you did for old J.P. Morgan.
Some BS talk would guess the market's soaring.
Ben Bernanke, hard assets to hold.
Oh, please, no cat food when we're all too old.
Please send in the PPT. Ben Bernanke, please send us. Please send us. Please send us some green.
Thank you for coming. My name is Grover Norquist, President of Americans for Tax Reform. Over the last week, some very illicit, very scandalous images of myself carousing with taxes have surfaced, and while I at first attempted to deny that I had ever had any romantic dalliances with taxes, I would like to take this opportunity to say that the photographs are in fact authentic, the tweets are of my personal 1040 statements, and that over the last 28 years I have carried on multiple affairs with numerous kinds of taxes, income taxes, sales taxes, and even estate taxes. First and foremost, I'd like to apologize to my family, who knew me as a devoted family man and the leader of a powerful anti-tax movement. In actuality, I was leading a selfishly double life, buying presents for and taking exotic trips with capital gains taxes and transfer taxes. In 2004, I engaged in a week-long drug-fueled orgy with corporate income taxes, a decision I now wholeheartedly regret. And in 2010, at the height of my misconduct while in Paris, I strongly flirted with a European-style value-added tax. At this time, I'd like to ask the media to respect my family's privacy as we work through this ordeal, and also to respect the privacy of taxes, which I realize through my numerous encounters can actually be fair, decent, and even loving. Especially expatriation taxes, I think I will miss our wonderful evenings the most. Thank you very much.
Mr. Norquist.
Mr. Norquist.
Mr. Norquist.
Mr. Norquist.
Mr. Norquist. Mr. Norquist.
Mr. Norquist. Thank you.
Colin Barnett, thanks for your time tonight.
Very good to be with you, Brian, and good evening.
You're the Premier of Western Australia, aren't you, of course?
I am, and very proudly so, Brian. Greatest place in the world, Western Australia.
Going very well, isn't it?
It's going beautifully. It's going absolutely beautifully at the
moment. Is Western Australia still there?
Is it still there?
Yeah.
Well, the majority of it's still there, yeah.
Well, you're exporting quite a lot of it.
We are exporting, yeah, a lot. We've got rid of an area about the size of Honduras, Brian.
But it's very big, isn't it, Western Australia?
It's a huge place. There's tons of it out there. It goes on till morning out there.
Yeah, and it goes to China and India.
A lot of it does, which is, of course, why we're the most successful economy in the world.
Mm, it is. And it's one of the reasons Australia's come through the GFC so well, isn't it?
Well, it is. I mean, you blokes would be at the airport selling trinkets if it weren't for us, wouldn't you?
Now, Colin Barnett, there have been reports that business leaders can have access to you for $25,000. Is that right?
Well, yeah, look, this is partly fundraising, Brian, but to be fair, it's the sort of thing you do anyway in an
economical
river of a joint like Western Australia. It's what you do anyway in order to stay in touch, Brian, with business leaders, with industry heads and with people who know what's going on.
But do the poor have access to you?
The poor?
Yeah.
Well, everyone has access to me, Brian. I'm the Premier of Western Australia. Everyone has access
but
to me.
But how do the poor secure meetings with you?
A meeting?
Yeah.
Well, you know, business leaders are paying 25 grand.
Well, the poor clearly don't have 25 grand.
That's right, Brian. I appreciate that. Nobody could appreciate that more than I do. If they had 25 grand, they wouldn't be the poor.
Exactly. So, so what do they do?
Oh, well, 24 grand.
24?
Talk to the secretary. We'd work something out. We're not unreasonable here, Brian.
Sure. What if they didn't have any money?
Lay-by. There are lay-by arrangements, right? We don't need it all now. You know, you can put something down and then knock a little bit off each month. Yeah.
Colin Burnett, do you think that charging people to have access to a democratically elected leader is a contradiction in terms?
No, I don't, Brian. Democracy is government by the people, and obviously leaders are people.
Yeah, so are the poor, aren't they?
They are, but they're not doing a lot of governing, Brian. It's government by the people.
But isn't that why the poor need representation?
Well, they've got representation. That's not the issue.
Well, shouldn't they have equal representation?
Equal to the people who can afford to pay for better representation.
Yes.
Well, there goes your market, Brian. I mean, you're very hard to maintain price if you photograph giving your product away.
Yeah, but what happens if the poor don't have any money? What do they do?
If the people who want to have a meeting don't have any money.
Yeah.
This is in Western Australia?
Yeah.
Unlikely, Brian.
Well, okay, let's...
It's going pretty well.
Hypothetically, if they did...
Well, I mean, you know, if there was special pleading involved,
what's
maybe...
What's the best you could do?
23 grand. Maybe breakfast.
Yeah, at the airport.
At an airport. Cup of coffee, a bit of a muffin, a few grievances, and I really must go.
Right.
We could have a croissant, one of those...
Croissant?
Pardon?
Croissant.
Where?
No. Colin Barnett, thanks for your time.
Oh, good to see you, Brian.
Was an F-A-T, C-A-T, he was a C-A-O, he was a V-I-P, he owes a B-O-I, owes a A-I-B, he needs a B-A-I-L-O-U-T. I need a bailout, can't make it on my own. I got a gold-digging woman trying to eat me out of house and home. I got a weak will, I can't pay my bills, I need a refill, just a couple of mil, I need a bailout. Well, I spend all my money over the whole damn town. Now the water coming in and the boat's going down. It ain't no joking, it ain't no jive. I got a duck, I got a dive to keep my four-wheel drive. I need a bailout. I need a bailout. I got my tailor's bills, I got a private plane, I got a Porsche to pay, I got a buy cocaine, I got six ex-wives trying to make me bleed. I'm an innocent victim of my own damn greed. I need a bailout. Well, I'm out on a limb, you know the future's grim. I gotta keep in trim, I gotta pay my gym, I gotta fight the flab, I gotta dodge the cab. I need a permatan, the Botox jab. I need a bailout, mama, I ain't gonna take the blame. I just can't help it, I just ain't got no shame. I need a bailout, mama. I need a bailout, can't you see I'm crying? I need a bailout, help me, Brian. I need a bailout, and a help somehow. I need a bailout, I need it now. I need a bailout, Brian, I can't make it on my own.
It's the banker's fault, and that's just what I'm here to talk about. I don't need financial advice, I just want a bailout.
Details of this show and other shows of the Kaput X Radio series can be found at radioforall.net.
We should punish people if they committed a crime or made a terrible mistake.
I was dead wrong when I said that.